Hello, welcome to the show. Thanks for tuning in. This week we'll be taking a close look at the top and bottom of the Premier League and how this is shaping up to be the most exciting end to a season since the fourth series of Breaking Bad. We'll be asking Robbie Savage about his favourite game, hearing more from Liza Minnelli, you heard that right, and asking how many touches per game is value for money when you cost more than the GDP of a small nation state. Yes, for all your funny football needs, the football's on. Joining us this week are two fine chaps with proper comedy chops. It's Lloyd Griffith and Ellis James. Morning, chaps.
Hello. Morning. Thank you for having us.
Morning. Lloyd, I'll start with you. What have you noticed this week?
I've noticed that it's become a bit of a hobby for football fans to start throwing things on the pitch at football matches, which, well, it's doing my head in, if I'm being brutally honest.
Yeah.
It's doing my head in. It's not part of the game, do you know what I mean? Just like lobbing a lighter or a 50 pence piece or maybe your child's dummy onto the pitch. And it's got to stop. It's got to stop. It's, you know, football teams are going to get told off. Thing, you know, I don't think it's going to get to the point where they stop playing football matches. But I think we need to make some serious changes to the game. Do you want to hear what I'm thinking, Stoney?
That's a very leading question, but yes, I do.
Territorial Army, along with the stewards at football matches with paintball guns. And then basically, it's good, like, firing practice for them, as it were. Do you know what I mean? So if you see someone with a lighter, about to lob a lighter onto the pitch, just a young 17-year-old lad in the Territorial Army, just a... And then it's, you know, maybe it'll stop them.
The problem is, Lloyd,
go on.
Have you seen that episode of Biker Grove where PJ is made blind by a paintball gun?
And
Deck man me eye!
And Ellis, I think that'll stop people from throwing things at football matches. Okay.
Yeah.
or they'll start wearing protective goggles at football matches. So buy shares in protective goggles. You know, win-win, really.
I think you might be overthinking it, but I like the idea. Ellis, what about you?
Well, I saw this on Twitter, and you always assume, because they're football mad in Italy, that the standard of football is high across the board. Well, they're even good at Nun League.
Yes, nuns playing football. I don't know if you know, in this game, there was actually, the second leg, there was a miraculous comeback. 3 days later, apparently.
And everyone's made the same Nun League joke. They're actually playing in the Chastity and Obedience Cup, which is a different competition.
Do you think maybe if there were like rabbis playing a game in Israel somewhere, you could have a sort of interfaith cup? There's no chance of any trouble there, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine the final, the aggro at the final of the of the Interfaith Cup? The amount of Territorial Army squaddies, if we're talking, you know, if we're going to use Lloyd's example, just taking pop shots at people who are throwing lighters on the pitch, as the Hindus take on the Buddhists, it'd be an amazing thing.
I don't think there'll be any half and half scarves at that game, will there? That's somewhere where the
Jews and Muslims half and half scarves. Do you think that'll work?
But what that clip that you've just shown of the nuns, there's actually a longer clip, and it's really nice. And at the end, they swap habits, which is no, it's great. It's really nice.
Anyone wants to write in with their own jokes, please do so. We haven't had the crosses one yet, so you know that's open for you. So last week, we laughed at Manchester United and they won two league games on the trot. We were then rude about Tottenham being terrible and they went to the Etihad and won at Manchester City. What I'm saying is, if your club is struggling, send enough money and we'll leave it to you to decide what that amount might be, and we will mock and ridicule your team to the point that their form will completely turn around. It's almost guaranteed. We're calling it the football's on bounce. Ellis, the title race and the race for the top four are back on thanks to Spurs. This programme is essentially a great joy and a terrible curse. Imagine if Cardiff City somehow cured world hunger.
Well, this... I thought that it was completely wrapped up. If you'd asked me a month ago who were going to win the league, and I said, it's not even a discussion. Man City are going to, they're going to rob it. Now, there's currently 6 points ahead. Leeds, Liverpool have got a game in hand. Have you noticed how every game in hand is always 3 points? Whenever there's a game, you never go, oh, we'll probably lose that one, actually. You always say, okay, well, we'll get 3 points from that one, and then we're only 3 points behind. So Liverpool are playing Man City in April, I think. But Man City are playing United, aren't they, in a couple of weeks' time, or quite soon. What a Sophie's choice for United fans. Because who do you want to give the title to, Man City or Liverpool? I mean, I would find it very, very difficult to make those calculations if I was a United fan. It's exciting, isn't it?
It's not the fans that make fans that make the choice, though, is it? I'm pretty sure it's
no, that's true.
No,
yeah.
I think Lloyd makes a very fair point there.
Yeah,
actually.
I think it's down to the players.
Three losses in a row, and then Spurs go to City and win and do the double over City. Respect is due, I think. I just wish it wasn't on this show.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got a smile there, Stoney, but you're dying inside, aren't you? You're absolutely dead inside. And also, it was beautiful that it was Harry Kane that was supposed to have joined Man City in the summer that then just shows how good he is and how much maybe they should have just splashed out a little bit more, you know, than maybe getting Jack Grealish. So, but I've done some calculations as to who I think is going to win the title, and it's a team of millionaires owned by a billionaire, so I think I've got that right.
Yes, we're still in it, Arsenal fans. It's still on. After last week's outburst in Italian about Spurs deficiencies, this week Antonio Conte spoke lovingly in English about the finest players he's ever worked with. Ellis, either he's sending out mixed messages or he needs a new interpreter.
What? At Tottenham? The finest players he's ever worked with? Is that...
That's what he said.
I mean, even if you're a Spurs player, you'd be like, come on, mate, don't let me... treat me with some respect.
Yeah.
No, but that's basically...
I can't be having that.
That's basically like any comedian, like doing a gig. We've all done a gig and you set up in Birmingham. Honestly, Birmingham, greatest city in the country. Yeah. And the next night you're in Cardiff, you're saying exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Kettering, my kind of town.
I don't do that. I don't do that. I'm totally honest with them wherever I am, which is why there are certain places I can't go back to. Lloyd,
hello.
Who doesn't love a last-minute goal, though? I mean, I didn't... When Harry Kane scored that goal, I look at all those faces behind the goal losing their mind. And as much as I hate them and everything they stand for, I can't help but love that moment.
But what I love most about that is that the highlights included the kickoff from their goal. So it was from Man City's goal. It then included the kickoff from that goal. And that's a beautiful thing. Like I went to see Grimsby Town versus Notts County the other week and we scored a last-minute goal. And just the excitement that I had in my stomach, I think for 7 days after. I mean, we even played a game after that, I think 4 days later, and we drew it 0-0 with Kings Lynn. But I was still thinking about that last-minute goal. So for Tottenham fans, I mean, to beat City in the final minute, and it's Harry Kane.
And it's why football is the best sport. Because if you've got the accumulation of points or of runs means you never get that moment. It's a bit like a knockout in boxing, I suppose. That's the closest I can think of. Yeah. But a 95th minute winner, there's nothing like it.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, we all agree. I mean, this win for Spurs does mean that Liverpool can catch Man City, and it does open up the frightening prospect of Liverpool winning the quadruple. Lloyd, would we ever hear the end of it?
No, I think the answer is that. I think I speak on behalf of every single football fan in the world. We would never, ever hear the end of it. But I love a title race that's opened. I mean, no one likes a title race that's done and dusted by like March or April. No. It's exciting. No. And I think it might be a two-horse race. Come back in 3 weeks' time and it might be, you know, a four-horse race. I'm not entirely sure. But I mean, it's just exciting to see. You know, we all want to hear that Aguero kind of esque last day of this season. I actually missed that game, and then we watched it on pause and completely missed the whole game. I didn't really explain that very well, did I? But what I'm getting at is
it sounds like you had it on pause for the whole game.
I basically didn't watch it in real time. went back and watched it and then fast forwarded it too much and then just realised that they won. So,
again, well, that's outstanding. Nice. That's really outstanding. As for the race for the top four, assuming that Chelsea hang on to third, it's one from Arsenal, Man United, Spurs, West Ham and Wolves. Ellis, is it about who can manage to not shoot themselves in the foot through the rest of the season?
Yeah, and wouldn't it be great if it was Wolves? Finishing fourth in the Prem. I mean, how many times have Arsenal finished fourth? I mean, you're the absolute masters at finishing fourth. Give it to Wolves, the best football team in the world in the 1950s, the home of Steve Bull. A man who, when he first got his trials at a professional club, they were like, you're tired. He's like, yeah, I'm still playing Sunday League twice every weekend. I mean, it's got to be Wolverhampton Wanderers. They're the team I'm backing in this.
Well, great. And this is excellent with your farewell performance on the football's on as well, Ellis. I was at Arsenal on Saturday and there was a strange moment when Lacazette was substituted and he tried to hand the captain's armband to Xhaka, who turned it down. Lloyd, no one wants the captain's armband at Arsenal. Is it like being the drummer from Spinal Tap?
It's interesting. I've not watched Spinal Tap.
Okay, then. Well, that question is slightly redundant.
Sorry.
Although there will be people at home going, yes, you're right. Let's move on to this then. Chelsea managed a 1-0 win at Palace at the weekend with a late winner from Hakim Ziyech. Romelu Lukaku had 7 touches. One of them was the kickoff, by the way. That is the least number of touches for someone who's played the full 90 minutes since counting touches began in 2003-2004. Insert your own joke there. Ellis, we've all played football with someone who's on the pitch but doesn't ever touch the ball, but they don't usually cost 97 million quid, do they?
Do you know what? With Lukaku, if he was playing like Tuesday night Power Leagues, at the end of that game, you'd have thought to himself, I paid £5 for that. Seven touches at the end of the game. They'd be like, you having a shower? No, I can't be bothered. I may as well go for a job interview. I mean, I've just been stunned here with my hands on my hips for 90 minutes. 7 touches, yeah. And he is worth almost £100 million. And Thomas Tuchel, there's a thing, an interview with him on the BBC website, and he said, now is not the time to laugh at Romelu Lukaku. I thought, have you never met football fans? Now is of course it's the time to laugh at Romelu Lukaku. 7 touches.
It's not good enough, is it? It's not good enough. I mean, Lloyd, there is a school of thought that Chelsea don't play in a way suited to Lukaku's particular talents, which does beg the question, why buy him? Either A, don't buy him, or B, buy him and try to accommodate him. But Chelsea seem to have gone for the option C, which is buy him and then ignore him.
The thing is, it's not his fault. Do you know what I mean? He didn't value himself at £100 million. He's just been bought at that, okay? And we've all had jobs in the past. I had one. I used to work for a cosmetics company where basically there was a few days where I did the equivalent of Romelu Lukaku. Do you know what I mean? Like 7 touches, absolute maximum. Do you know what I mean? Under the radar. I'm still getting paid. Get in, get out. See you later on. Do you know what I mean? So it's not his fault. And if you think about it, he's still getting paid the same. He scored 10 goals this season anyway. I think he's like the top scorer for Chelsea at the moment. So, I mean, to be fair though, Ellis and I play football on a Tuesday with a 72-year-old comedian called Ivor Dembina. And I think even he has more touches than Romelu Lukaku. He's paid his fiver.
And my favourite thing about Ivor Dembina, last time I played with him, the second half, he played with a cup of coffee in his hand.
He did. You played with it. That's what Romelu Lukaku should do. Just really test the patience of Chelsea fans and football fans around the world. Just come on with a cup of coffee in the second half next game and just see how far he gets with it.
Not that I want to talk too much about Ivor Dembina, a person our viewers will not know, but I watched him play football once and his cousin played on the opposite team and they went up for a header at the same time and both went, Dembina! And I thought, I've never seen that on a football team. Anyway, they bought him. It's still a question of why they bought him. Essentially, they're saying they couldn't get Haaland they couldn't get Erling Haaland. And Roman Abramovich is so much money, £100 million, means nothing to him.
Nothing.
It's essentially like a tax write-off, Ellis, you know. Like, you know when you buy an expensive coffee machine for the office because you can claim it, but you don't even like coffee.
Yeah, and I don't know. That is such an insane thing to say, isn't it? I couldn't get the footballer I really wanted, So I bought this one for £100 million. You break it down. But yeah, I don't know. As Lloyd pointed out, we've all had jobs where we haven't pulled our weight. Maybe.
I would say so, yes.
Maybe with his seven touches. He went home to his wife and he's like, seven touches. Honestly, I was looking at my watch. I was daydreaming. I was reading a book in the second half. It was absolutely hilarious.
I mean, the fans were fuming. The fans were fuming and they booed me off at full time. But what a day.
£15 million a touch, near enough. He did post a message on his Snapchat. He said, if you have to force it, then it probably doesn't fit. Now, either it's a cryptic message to Thomas Tuchel that he's being used in the wrong way, or he's doing some plumbing and he's got Imperial steel pipe work. And he's... before we go to the break, a little reminder that you can hear all of this content, plus some of the stuff that didn't quite make it onto the telly, on our podcast, The Football's On and On. It's on all the major podcast platforms. And if you like it, subscribe, tell your friends, get them to tell their friends. And if you're so inclined, take out an advert praising us in a national newspaper. We'll leave it up to you. Back with more football blather in a short while. Part two of The Football's On with me, Ellis James and Lloyd Griffith. So in part one, we took a look at the top of the table. Now let's have a root around in the dusty depths of the bottom of the Premier League. As we see it here at the Football Zone, there are seven teams that could make the dreaded drop. Although if Leicester or Aston Villa continue with their poor form, they could get sucked into a relegation dogfight, like a black hole, only with a greater financial penalty. We'll discuss some of the runners and riders. Norwich are being spirited. We never thought they'd get this close, but with it, they're gone. Sorry, Norwich. Ellis, is it the problem that Norwich is just not a scary place? Carrow Road is not the den.
It's not the den. And also, they will go down and then they'll come back up. And then they'll go down again and then they'll come back up. So if Norwich get relegated, it's just the ultimate collective shrug of the shoulders, isn't it? They're good enough to get promoted from the Championship. They're not quite good enough to stay in the Premier League. I've been to Carrow Road. I have.
Me too. I love it.
I've got just zero opinion on Norwich. The only opinion I've got on Norwich is on my 13th birthday, I had a Chinese and I watched them beat Bayern Munich. That is the only opinion I have on Norwich. And I was a big fan of Jeremy Goss. So, best of luck to them.
Chris Sutton mentioned that the other week when he was talking about his favourite game. Burnley got a great result away at Brighton at the weekend, 3-0. I personally didn't know that Burnley were allowed to score three goals in a match. I thought it was some sort of local bylaw. Lloyd, they're annoyingly clingy in the Premier League, but maybe that's just me being a bit prejudiced. I mean, do you like them? Do people in Grimsby say, if only we could do a Burnley?
Well, I mean, to be fair, we'd love to do a Norwich. But I think with Burnley, it's interesting. I mean, because they're light, because they're managed by Sean Dyche, who I think is one of the most likeable managers that's ever existed, in my opinion. But also as well, I think it's so amazing they've clung on to Premier League status for so many years, considering I don't think they've bought a player since 1996. Like, they just have not spent any money at all. Well, like, I think Nick Pope was the last person that I think they bought. Like, and that is saying something. I really hope they do cling on, because they're a good team to have. And they'll have little surprise wins every now and then. And it's always great to see our Sean Dyche pre and post match interview. But I have to say, as a general, it's not a great advert for English football managers, considering that the bottom five are all managed by English managers. And then, as you say, if Aston Villa gets sucked into it, that's another one as well. So, yeah, it isn't a great advert for English managers, that the fact that the bottom five is populated by, sadly, English managers. But, you know, a lot of them have come in this season and are trying to work wonders, so it's not entirely their fault. I guess it's just, you know, jobs availability. Europeans coming over here, saving our jobs, etc., etc., etc.
What I like about Burnley is that they get crowds of just over 20,000.
Lovely.
The town itself has a population of 73,000. So the idea that a town that small can have a Premier League team, mm-hmm. I just think is brilliant. And, I really hope they stay in.
Right. Okay. Well, what about Watford then, Ellis? We'll ask you about Watford. I mean, you were talking about Norwich, and they go down, they come up again. I mean, don't you feel the same about Watford?
Yeah.
You know, and do you want to be a Premier League team or not?
You know, if I had to choose between Watford and Luton, I'd always go Luton, because have you been to the away end at Kenilworth Road?
Oh, the Oak Stand. Is it the Oak Stand?
Yeah, yeah. You just got to walk through someone's. You basically got to walk through someone's house. As you walk up the steps, you can see what people are watching on the telly, and you can see like washing being hung out and all that kind of stuff. So again, when I think of Watford in the Premier League, I think of that Troy Deeney last minute winner in the playoffs, you know, 10 years ago. Yes. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be. I've been to Vicarage Road a couple of times, but I've never thought. I've got a strong opinion on Watford, actually.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean,
I know what you mean about Norwich and Watford. I mean, as for the rest, I watched Brentford at the weekend. They didn't offer a huge amount, but Christian Eriksen might help. Newcastle, I think they'll stay up, and I'd quite like them to, but if they go down, I can console myself with the fact that it will take at least another £1 billion of oil money to buy the Premier League. Leeds, they got better players when they're back from injury. Let's talk Everton, though. Lloyd, Everton seem like the moodiest of the seven that we've mentioned.
Yeah, and they've made some pretty impressive signings during the window, and hasn't really materialised yet. Whereas someone like Newcastle have made some great purchases, and it's really helped. Like Kieran Trippier, I think he's going to be a big loss for Newcastle. I think he's coming back for the last few games of the season. But then they brought in Donny van der Beek and Dele Alli, and just from various Everton fans speaking this weekend, it's not made a massive impression. And, you know, do they need Romelu Lukaku and his seven touches?
They also have a relatively inexperienced manager as well, and they're owned by the British-Iranian businessman Farhad Mashiri, and their chairman is, and I love saying this every time, the theatrical impresario Bill Kenwright. Do you think he's in the boardroom on it after losing away? Never mind defeat, lads. There's no business like show business. That would surely upset them, wouldn't it, Ellis?
Guys and dolls, luck be a lady tonight.
No, don't go, Stay, stay up. Stay.
The thing with Everton, when they beat Leeds the weekend, there was a really, really great atmosphere at Goodison Park. And Goodison Park, when it's rocking, is really, really great. Mm. And I looked into why the atmosphere was so good. And Everton, like the Everton Supporters Club, had really made an effort. And they had flags and they had banners. They also made the beer far cheaper. So that is why it was absolutely rocking at Goodison Park. It was like a buy one, sort of get one half price. Everyone was absolutely hammered at Goodison Park. And, you know, they're so low on confidence as a team. And they make decisions that, you know, show how low on confidence they are. I was listening to a phone-in about Everton, and the person leading the phone-in said to this Everton fan, you know, do the team need a bunch of psychiatrists? And the guy went, make the fans need psychiatrists? What are we doing? It's an absolute nightmare every week. So there's clearly an issue at Goodison Park, and you just need to raise the players, because they're a better squad than their league position would suggest, I think.
I would agree. One more thing before we stop talking about this. Lloyd, I'll ask you about this. Chris Wood, apparently what happened when Newcastle were playing West Ham at the weekend, every time he got near Kurt Zouma, he was going up to him going, meow. I don't know if he did it once or again and again. I mean, is there such a thing as persistent meowing?
I love the fact that Kurt Zouma was catcalled throughout the whole game. And yet he complained to the referee. He complained to the referee in like an absolute like primary school, going up to the teacher, be like, can you ask him to stop doing the meow thing? It's like, no, mate, you kicked a cat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're getting what's coming to you.
Yeah. Yeah. For the next 10 years.
At least.
Everton's opponents in FA Cup Round 5 are Bournemouth FC, the only non-league team left in the tournament. One peculiar thing about Bournemouth's upcoming match with Everton, both the kits clash. So Everton have bought them a specially made third kit, because heaven forbid, Ellis, they should play a game where the socks are the same.
Yeah, I've never... Does anyone differentiate between players by looking at the socks first? Who scored that? I've got no idea. I just saw a lot of socks. It could have been anywhere. I don't know what the score is. It's just sock after sock after sock. Yeah, and
it is ridiculous.
I like the fact that they've bought them this third kit. Because now I think players get two kits per half. So I think you get a long sleeve and a short sleeve per half. So it's four kits in total. It's not so long ago, in the 80s, you would get one kit to last you the whole season. A mate of mine's got Robbie James' shirt from 81-82 when the Swans were in the First Division. And I said, so which game did he play that? We're in that. And the guy went, that was his shirt for the season. If you look at it, it's all like patched up and sewn up and stuff, like the badges hanging off. So that is why, if you get a footballer's kit, it's not really as impressive as it used to be years and years ago, because they've got absolutely millions of them knocking about.
Lloyd, while we talk about the National League, Grimsby a couple of points outside the playoffs.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying it this season more? I believe you are, aren't you?
Yeah, it's been up and down. It's been an absolute roller coaster. We were top for a long time. Then we went on a run where we had won in 9 games. Now we're doing all right again. A lovely last minute win against Notts County, as I mentioned earlier. A good few wins, you know, but then when you draw against Kings Lynn, you just think, what is going on? You know what I mean? We used to be in the Championship and now we're drawing 0-0 with Kings Lynn on a Tuesday night, which is, I'm happy to say the word, depressing. No disrespect to Kings Lynn. Bournemouth, we've actually not played them yet. We haven't played any. They've been, I think the Bournemouth game at Grimsby has been postponed 3 times now. And because of their cup run, that is one of the reasons why. So Bournemouth are actually in third place. There's some good teams. Obviously, there's the big teams that everyone talks about, your Stockports, your Notts Counties, your Wrexhams, your Chesterfield. But then you've got the likes of Bournemouth, Bromley, you know, and Halifax all doing well. So it's good, but it's a really tough league. It's a really, really tough league. Obviously, only one goes up automatically. And then there's the playoffs, which is the playoffs in the National League. I mean, it doesn't make sense. I think it's like 2 and 3, it's like who got the best GCSEs out of the players. And then between 4 and 7, it's how many Duke of Edinburgh goals the fans have got. And then the fourth plays, the whoever's got the biggest, the best BMI from the whole squad against the worst BMI of the fans. So it's like, it's a really weird calculation as to how the playoffs are calculated. So, I mean, I'd love to go back up to the Football League, but it's a really, really tough league. And you've got teams like Bournemouth who are doing bits, as the young kids would say.
Yeah, well, I'll have to take your word for that.
Thank you.
But they are doing very well, which is, I think, is what you said anyway. As we were talking about kits just a minute ago, who better to tell us what she thinks than the global singing sensation herself? It's Liza Minnelli.
Beep, 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 boop.
Oh, hi! I didn't see you there. I'm Liza Minnelli. When you show up at a football match, you'll notice something. There are literally thousands of players on the bench. I mean, why else would all those people be there watching, wearing the club shirt? No, seriously, I was down the county ground watching my beloved Swindon playing at home against Oxford United in 1976, and Don Rogers went down in a dodgy tackle. Management was literally yelling to the stands, "Quick, quick, I need a decent outside left right now!" Barry from the darts team down the Dog and Duck rose from his seat, already in the club shirt. He scored a hat-trick that day. People will tell you that didn't happen. It did. I want to ask something here, though. Home kit? Away kit? Then why the hell is there a third kit? I mean, I love a spare outfit, but that's ridiculous. I guess they're for evening matches, you know, when you need to dress up real nice. I'm gonna tell you something, though, that I can't abide. Half and half scarves. If I see somebody turn up in a half and half scarf, I know they're a football tourist. Not a true fan like me, Liza Minnelli. A bitch.
Yes, that was Liza Minnelli, better known as Suze Kempner. Time for Who Am I? This is the quiz where I give out 3 clues and the panellists have to guess who I'm talking about. I've tried to keep some level of difficulty this week by not emailing the answers to our guests, which is what I did last week. I was born. I know, it made it an interesting, slightly easy quiz. I was born in 1966 and played for 8 clubs, all in England, apart from one loan spell in Sweden. I never won a league trophy, won the FA Cup 3 times in 88, 97 and 2000, runner-up in 2005 as player-manager. And my other trophies include a UEFA Cup Winners' Cup, a League Cup and the UEFA Super Cup. And I played 21 times for England, scoring once. We will give you the answer after the break. Part 3 of the Football's On, Ellis James, Lloyd Griffith and me, Ian Stone. Before the break, I asked, who am I? I gave these 3 clues. I was born in 1966, played for 8 clubs, all in England, apart from one loan spell in Sweden. I never won a league trophy, won the FA Cup 3 times in 88, 97 and 2000. I was also a runner-up in 2005 as player-manager. My other trophies include a UEFA Cup Winners' Cup, a League Cup and the UEFA Super Cup. And I played 21 times for England, scoring once. Who am I? Lloyd?
I'm really struggling here. My initial thought was Nicholas Anelka, but then I realised he's crucially not English.
aside from that one small fact. You're right, he's crucially not English.
I'm just going to go with a stab in the dark, and I know I'm going to get abuse on Twitter, but why change the habit of a lifetime? I'm going to go with Frank Sinclair.
Oh, he's closer than he knows, isn't he, Ellis? Because you know this, don't you?
Dennis Wise.
Oh! It is indeed Dennis Wise. Because we were saying in the break, we were saying that we know all the FA Cup winners up to about 95, 96, and then after that it drops off a little bit.
Yeah.
I think people who are younger might know him a bit further on. But Chelsea won the FA Cup those years. And also quite a few other trophies. For anyone who didn't see Dennis Wise play and hasn't heard the joke, a tricky putt in golf is known as a Dennis Wise because it's a nasty little 5-footer. Anyway.
I'd love to see you say that to his face, Ian. Sorry. I would love to see you say that to his face. Guarantee you won't.
Of course.
Guarantee you won't.
I'd say it over his face. Because I'd tower over him. Okay. Now it's time for my favourite game, where a BT Sport pundit talks about those once-in-a-lifetime moments that will stay etched on their memory. This week, it's an emotional one. Okay, my favourite game this week is with Robbie Savage. Hello, Robbie. Choose a favourite game for us.
It would have to be an international game, Millennium Stadium, 75,000. It was a European qualifier against Italy. Italy with a team of Gattuso, Nesta, Cannavaro, Del Piero. And we won the game 2-1. You know, playing for your hero, Mark Hughes, 75,000 Welsh fans. It was just an immense feeling to start the group 4 wins from 4. Italy was the 4th. The return at the San Siro, we got beat 4-0. But to play in front of, you know, 75,000 people, international football, something that Chris Sutton wouldn't know about, was quite quite remarkable, and, you know, playing for your country.
Of course. And when you're in a tunnel and you've got the Italians next to you, is there a little bit of starstruck, perhaps? Because you're talking about players who are superstars.
Yeah. You know, and later, I think, or early in my career, I'd been thrown out of a Wales squad for disrespecting Paolo Maldini when I threw his shirt. You know, for as naivety, of course, he's a legend. So there was a bit more on that game. I'm not sure it was after or before that incident happened. But when you're standing there with such great players, Del Piero, you know, and I think it was one of the times that, as a Welsh national side, every player played in the Premier League as well. You know, so, you know, it was an amazing...
It wasn't a bad team, was it?
It was a fantastic team. And, you know, we lost in the playoffs to Russia. We drew in Moscow 0-0 and we lost the return 2-0, which is disappointing. But, yeah, to play in that game, you know, I believe it was a man-of-the-match performance, but, you know, to the point where Gattuso was subbed. Gattuso come onto the pitch. I was just running around, you know, trying to tackle everybody, trying to tackle corner flags, the crowd, everybody, getting the crowd going. And Gattuso actually come on and got subbed. That's how devastating I was in the middle of the park.
Did you go in for a tackle with him at any point?
Oh, of course, loads of times, yeah. But when he was on the pitch. But, you know, to play in, you know, Italy, you know, the white kit with a blue shirt. I've got
classic, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got Nesta. I got Nesta's shirt on the back of that game, you know, in my, within one of my shirt collection. But, yeah, a wonderful, wonderful experience. But to do it in front of that many fans for your hero, Mark Hughes, was, you know, and that
for your country. Forget.
For your country, yeah, of course. You know, everybody's dream is, you know, everybody's boys and girls dream is, you know, playing for their country. I was lucky to fulfil mine, you know, in front of, you know, a passionate. Was the roof closed? I think the roof was closed as well. So the national anthem on that night was one of the most best I've ever witnessed. It was quite incredible.
Great. Thanks, Robbie.
Pleasure.
Lovely.
Pleasure.
Sorry, can I just interrupt there? Can anyone confirm, did Gattuso get subbed in that game? Because I don't think it was mentioned about seven or eight times.
Lloyd, he was excited. It was. He really got quite emotional. Ellis, are you okay, by the way, listening to that? I'm assuming you were at the game.
I was there. My favourite bit, Italy had loads of fans the away end. There were 4,000 or 5,000 of them. And I just remember the Welsh fans chanting, "Can we play you every week?"
That's outstanding.
That was good team.
Is there something with the smaller the nation, the more this stuff sort of this stuff means, really?
Oh, 100%. Because we beat Germany 1-0 when they were world champions in June 91. We beat Spain in 1985, beat them 3-0 at the race course. Italy 2-1 in October 2002. Obviously, the Euros in 2016. These are the games that keep you going when the team is at a low ebb. Because Wales, as a country, is just about big enough that every sort of 9 or 10 years or so, we'll get a really brilliant result. And they're the ones that, you know, you've got the frame programmes, or you've got, you know, they released that game on video, the FAW, when we beat, and it was a qualifier as well. But, yeah, I even bought the Italian papers from the next day, and I had them framed, and it's the Lezione Gallese, which means Welsh lesson. I had that up in my bedroom. It was just an absolutely brilliant time to be a Wales fan.
Wow. Lloyd, I was going to ask whether you've got emotional when England have won big betties, but I have seen the Instagram posts. I think we have a picture here. There we go.
Yeah.
I think we've got some more emotional ones than that as well. It is an emotional thing watching England play.
Yeah. If I'm honest, I don't really remember much of the Euros from last year. I spent most of it inebriated, trying to swerve COVID. So it was, an amazing month.
Yeah. I mean, when it is something, isn't it? When the national team does well, there really is nothing like it. I used to say, would you rather have Arsenal win the Champions League or England win the World Cup? And I would pick the Champions League. But now I sort of feel slightly differently about the whole thing. Because when your national team does well, you could see how emotional Robbie was getting there, Ellis.
Yeah, and what I love about international football is that you can have a Gareth Bale next to someone who might be in the Championship, but they're from the same country, and that's the way it is. And all of the teams, really, apart from the really main nations, the sort of top 10 or 12 countries, will have those problems that they face. And when it goes right, it's just with the Welsh national team in particular, because Wales is so small. Like, I know people who are at school with Gareth Bale, and I know people who are at school. I used to live with someone who was at school with Aaron Ramsey, so you just feel like you can really relate to that team. And that England team at Euro 2020, I felt I could really relate to them as players. And if I'd been English, I think I'd have been obsessed with that side.
Yeah, yeah. On the domestic front, I want to ask you about Swansea as well. Got thrashed by Sheffield United last weekend. I'm sorry, Ellis. I mean, it's sort of interesting the way that Lloyd was talking about Grimsby. They started well, but like them, things do appear to have taken a turn for the worse since your last appearance on the show. Do you think it's anything? Do you think it's anything to do with getting a couple of Swansea quiz questions wrong? Well, like the players heard your answers and thought, well, if Ellis is losing touch, what's the point?
He's lost faith. I was there at Bramall Lane on Saturday.
Yeah.
And it's quite a long way to go, Sheffield. And
he lives in Grimsby. He's just laughing at
me. When you're 2-0 down after 15 minutes or whatever it was, I just looked at my mates and I thought, oh, why have I bothered? And obviously Morgan Gibbs-White scored, and he's an ex-player. And we are convinced, I don't know if all clubs are like this, if all fans are like this. We are all, as Swansea fans, convinced that if you played for the Swans, you will definitely score against us when we play you. And I asked a lot of people in the away end, I said, what do you reckon the sort of percentages of ex-players who score against us? And the average was 50%. Wanbrook went 100%. It happens every single time. And I haven't looked at the statistics, but I am fairly confident that every single player who's ever played for Swansea has scored against us. There is something, I don't know, it's written in the stars. It's some new supernatural force at working at hand. And I absolutely hate it. So, I don't know. I mean, we won't go down. We're just going to be sort of bottom end of mid-table. Obviously, we've got a new manager in Russell Martin. So he's had the January window. You know, it's still not his team, is what he would say.
No.
So we're looking ahead to next season though.
Well, let's stay in Wales for a bit longer. I know it's sort of what we come to know as our principality section. We want to talk Wrexham scoring the equaliser against Wealdstone in the 88th minute. Actually, shouldn't have been given. Do either of you know why?
Financial irregularity.
Good effort, okay. But no. That's right. Ryan Reynolds, Hollywood cash is just too much.
Thank you.
No, it's because the taker kicked it twice without anyone else touching it. Yes, even referees in the National League sometimes make mistakes. And then in the 95th minute, I'll say it again. Who doesn't love a last minute winner? Lloyd, when the barriers all fall down, you know it's a big goal, right?
And I mean, to be fair, Reece Hall-Johnson used to play for Grimsby. And when we played them the other week, it was Ollie Palmer, an ex-Grimsby player, that scored the only goal and absolutely wounded us. But there's been a few games. Obviously, in the National League, I'd say the stadia isn't as safe as, let's say, the Championship. And there's been a few games where I've just seen 40, 50 Grimsby Town fans just go through a hoarding. Welling is one that sticks in my mind in particular. Yeah. 0-0 at half time, and then we scored four goals in the second half. And that fourth goal, I think it was Porrick Hammond that scored the fourth. Just 40 or 50, not on purpose, just Grimsby Town fans just celebrating it. And just, you know, almost, you know, like a game of dominoes, just 40 blokes just on the floor facing the mud.
Yeah, Arsenal, we just stand up and clap politely.
I don't think you clap, do you?
Sometimes we don't even get up.
No, you just look over the paper and be like, oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, we've equalised. Okay, now it's time for Call Yourself a Fan. After last week's debacle, when our two panellists got a total of 1 out of 10 correct answers between them, we did wonder whether we should make the question slightly easier, but the generally held view was that their exquisite pain in not knowing something basic about their club was way more entertaining. So we've made them slightly harder. Lloyd, to go first. You ready?
I'm against Ellis James, the encyclopedic Swansea. No, come on, mate. This is, when I saw the email, I was like, I'm up against Ellis. I was like, well, what is the point in even turning up?
So. What you've got to remember is I'm not one of Jurgen Klopp's mentality monsters. And the fact that this is on telly means that I will just crumble as soon as Ian asks me a question that I do know the answer to.
And then,
so it's all about who wants it.
Can I say as well, last time I was on, the next day I went to the Grimsby game and this show was on. It was an evening kickoff. And they were just absolutely pummeling me for not knowing the highest position that Grimsby had ever had. So cheers for that, Stoney. I'm looking forward to Dover at the weekend.
That's all right. We do what we can to make your football-going experience slightly more uncomfortable.
Cheers.
All right, Lloyd. How many players that have played for Grimsby have also played for England? We're not whilst at Grimsby necessarily. I'll give you, you'll get a little margin of error here. How many players that have played for Grimsby have also played for England at some point in their career?
Are we having England B as well?
Great question. Love that.
I know that Tony Ford definitely played for England B whilst at Grimsby. I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with 5.
No, it's more than that. It's 12.
Really?
We've had 12 players.
Wow.
Grimsby players. That's an incredibly difficult question.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah. Please don't edit that out.
All right. Question two. Grimsby have had a very long history. During that time, they've only ever had one person take charge of the team who wasn't born in Britain or Ireland. Who was it?
Oh, well, he's Hungarian. Burka. He was Hungarian. I mean, surely I should just get the point for that.
No, what I've got on, as an answer is Anthony Limbrick, who took caretaker charge in 2019.
Well, yeah, but he was Australian. But we were the first team in England, I think, to employ a manager that wasn't English.
Do you know what? We'll take it to the panel, and if we turn out to be wrong, Lloyd, somebody will come to Dover.
No. We can't. No, sorry, we can't have Eleanor Burkesey. Thank you. What did I?
All right, you get a point. I'll give you the point. Are you happy now?
Unbelievable.
I mean, I know I should want to win. He deserves more than a point for that. He's basically discredited the entire quiz.
Yes, I'm only going to give him a point. A point is all I've got.
I called him Burka, didn't I? And I think it was Elmer Burka.
Near enough.
Yeah, look, come on. And he was Hungarian. Anthony Limbrick, yeah, okay, fine. I'll have 2 points then.
You're not having a point for someone you didn't name. 1 point. Grimsby have had a Player of the Year award since 1972. I love it. Like, before that, did they just go, no one deserves it? Who's won it the most times?
John McDermott.
No, James McKeown.
Oh,
4 times.
I am literally on James McKeown's testimonial committee this year. This is not going to go down very well with our weekly meeting on Thursday evening.
Outstanding. You can name a Hungarian manager who's not even on our list.
Elmer Burkesey.
But you can't name a bloke you're helping organise his testimonial.
God, this is awful.
It's all right. It's done now, Lloyd. Let it go. All right, a couple of general knowledge for you. Who's the only African player to win FIFA World Player of the Year?
Mohamed Salah.
No, it's George Weah.
George Weah.
George Weah.
Do I get a point because I knew that?
No, you don't, Ellis. I'll answer that.
Okay, still 1 out of 4, and that's disputable. Will you let me have that? Of the 10 countries who compete in the Copa America, 2 have never won it. Ecuador is one of them. Who is the other?
Chile.
No, they have won it. They won it the other year, didn't they? When
did they?
Alexis Sanchez
dragged
them through.
Ellis, did you know that, Ellis? Do you know that, Ellis? That's great.
Ellis would have known that. Venezuela. It is. Lloyd scored 1. We'll give him 1 out of 5.
Lloyd, it's Venezuela. 85 years of hurt. It's the song they're always...
That is what they sing. But it'll be Ellis's turn after the break. The final part of the Football's On, Call Yourself a Fan Part 2. Now it's the turn of Ellis James, a man who lives and breathes Swansea City. Ellis, here we go. Swansea City, formed in 1912 as Swansea Town. When did they change their name to Swansea City?
1969.
Boom. I mean, no messing
around. Yeah, I knew that.
1 out of 1. Okay,
I knew
question
that.
2.
I knew that. 69.
In the 2013-14 season, Swansea went on a Europa League adventure where they finished 2nd in their group behind Valencia and just above Krasnodar. Who finished bottom of the group? You'll know this.
Petrolul Ploiesti.
No. I've got St...
Oh, St. Gallen's!
You've been living under a rock.
Yeah, we all know that, Lloyd. Come on. Ridiculous. All right, question 3. Swansea City's record transfer fee they have received is £45 million, but who was it for?
Gylfi Sigurdsson.
It was. Gylfi Sigurdsson moved to Everton and then it all went horribly wrong. Let's go. A few general knowledge questions. Who is the only Premier League manager to have won a Manager of the Month award with 4 different clubs?
Premier League Manager of the Month, 4 different clubs. I'm going to say Sam Allardyce.
No, good effort though. It's Harry Redknapp.
West
Ham, Portsmouth, Southampton and Spurs.
I think Sam Allardyce only won it once.
Yeah. He has managed pretty much every Premier League club below the bottom 6. But, if you say so, Lloyd, I'll take your word for
it. Thank you.
Question 5. The Welsh Premier Division has been in existence since 1992. Which club has won the most titles?
TNS.
The New Saints, exactly. Yeah. 13 titles.
And can I offer you a bonus question? Who manages the New Saints?
Is it your mate, McKeon?
No.
I can't remember.
I don't know. Who does manage the New Saints?
Anthony Limbrick. The answer for the question that was wrong earlier.
Is that right?
This quiz is a sham. I'm just going to Google that, actually. One second.
And Ellis scored 3 out of 5. Nice work, Ellis. Very, Thank very you. Good.
I can't Redemption. Believe it wasn't Petrol Ploy SD, but of course it was St Gallen. It's so obvious now I'm thinking back.
Ellis scored 3 out of 5 and beats Lloyd 3-1. And even the one was slightly dodgy, but...
It's not my fault you didn't get the quiz right.
Ellis, you can hold your head up high yeah. next time.
I like the,
you're
I like,
going down to Swansea.
I like the researchers.
I love this slight mumbling in the background. The Champions League and Europa League are in the middle of the first knockout phase. And so far, I think our favourite result has been Rangers going to Dortmund in the Europa League and spanking them 4-2. Lloyd, Scottish football has been in the doldrums for a while, at least in terms of European competition. But to coin a cliche, this will send shockwaves through Europe.
It will send shockwaves through Europe until Haaland gets fit and then they get spanked 6-0 in the return leg. But to be fair, it was a strong team. You know, they had Bellingham, Royce. Who else did they have? Hummels was playing. You know, it was a strong team. What I also love is the fact that then Rangers went and drew with Dundee United like 3 days later. So to kind of bring themselves back down to earth. But I think if Haaland is fit for the return leg and obviously it's still up in the air, then it's a very, very different game. The bloke is an absolute robot and just changes games, you know, like that. So, but yeah, it was a great evening. I had a few friends that kind of went to the game and just couldn't believe what had happened. So, it's great for them. Yeah. And I don't think, you know, it's Scottish football at the moment. I think it's a transitional stage, obviously, with different management for both teams and stuff. But it's great to see them do well in Europe.
I agree. I completely agree. Ellis, I watched it. It was a fantastic game. I was sort of flicking between watching Barcelona and Napoli just to see the Barcelona post-Messi and how bad it's got. They were booing Dembele at one point when he came on. I mean, it was really shocking. Both entertaining games.
Well, the thing with Borussia Dortmund, for the Rangers fans who are out there, it's one of those grounds I would absolutely love to go to. Borussia Dortmund. Yes. It just looks incredible. And I think they get a lot of football tourists for that reason, because they've got that huge terrace by the goal that holds about 25,000, I think.
The yellow wall.
Yeah. And Mats Hummels gave an amazingly German excuse for why they'd lost to Rangers. He said, "At times we played nonsensical football."
Yeah.
Nonsensical right. football. They're not my favourite German club, though. My favourite German club is Schalke. Because when Rabbi Matondo was at Schalke, the official Schalke Twitter feed used to tweet in Welsh because Matondo is from Wales. And I thought, what a lovely touch. But yeah, I just... When you go to European aways like that, beating a really, really big club like Borussia Dortmund, that is the reason you go. So I'm very jealous of the Rangers fans who made the trip to Germany.
I would, I'd love to go to Borussia Dortmund just for that stadium alone, to be in that yellow wall. I mean, just imagine being in that yellow wall in full swing, in full voice. Do you know what I mean? I've been in some choirs in my time. Do you know what I mean? But that would absolutely take the biscuit. We've actually in Grimsby, we've got a yellow wall ourselves. But you know, if they will take the urinals away, come on, LloydGriffith.com.
It was funny actually. Before the show, we were talking about Arsenal winning away at Real Madrid in 2006, which is the anniversary, and Thierry Henry looking imperious. Last week in the Champions League, Manchester City thrashed Sporting Lisbon, which I think is less a reflection on the Portuguese league and more highlights the strength of the Prem. Liverpool beat Inter Milan in the San Siro, and PSG beat Madrid with a last-minute goal by Kylian Mbappe. As an Arsenal fan, I'm sort of just like you guys now in that I'm an interested onlooker with the Champions League. I mean, I'll certainly watch it if I'm not gigging. But Ellis, is it becoming a bit predictable? I guess no one would have predicted Chelsea last year.
No, I just think with the Champions League, up to the last date, there's too much of it. So I don't really care. And then from the quarterfinals onwards, it's the most exciting tournament in Europe. Yeah. And, you know, the quarterfinal, the semi, and the final are sort of must-watch football. But the group stages, and who is watching the group stages, really?
BT Sport viewers, Ellis.
Yes, apart from BT Sport viewers, who I love and respect.
Yes, yes. I mean, there were a couple of funny moments in the Liverpool-Milan game. Virgil van Dijk, when Liverpool scored, he decided to hug Denzel Dumfries, which is all very well. They're Dutch teammates, but they were playing for opposite teams. I'm not sure Dumfries really wanted a hug at that point. And we've got a lovely video. Not a lovely video. I mean, Lloyd was talking about things being thrown from the stadium. And I think Jordan Henderson thought he'd been hit by a missile when they were celebrating Liverpool's goal. But it was Joel Matip slapping him on the back of the head. And it's quite funny to see them celebrating. And Jordan Henderson does not look happy here.
But it's because Jordan Henderson's got the most perfectly coiffed hair in English football at the moment. Do you know what I mean? So he doesn't want anyone messing with that. Do you know what I mean? He's probably paid £13 million a year by Brillgrave.
So I'm not having that, Lloyd. Mikel Arteta is our manager, and he was standing out in Storm Eunice the other day, and he came back in looking exactly the same.
I'm very envious of his hair. In fact, to be fair, I'm very envious of most people's hair.
Okay, let's move on to this week in history. A couple of quick examples. 24th of February 2004, Bournemouth's James Hayter got a very quick hat-trick against Wrexham on this date. He was brought on as a substitute with 6 minutes remaining, scored 3 goals in 2 minutes and 20 seconds. But his parents and brother, they were at the match, but they didn't think he was going to be brought on, so they left with 10 minutes to go to catch the early ferry back to the Isle of Wight. Lloyd, can you imagine his face when he came up to the players' lounge after the game? Have you seen my mum and my brother? they left. What do you mean they left?
They love you so much, they're now on a different island. Okay.
They sailed away.
I mean, to be fair, though, I again, as someone who is gigged on the Isle of Wight, it's not an easy journey, is it? And there have been times where I have cut a show short to try and get that early ferry, because what you don't want to be doing is to be left on the Isle of Wight. And I guess similarly the other way around, you know what I mean? You don't want to be left in Bournemouth, as lovely as Bournemouth is, and, you know, LloydGriffith.com for dates. But, yeah, I can kind of see why they'd done it. And I'm sure it's captured on video, weren't it?
Yeah. Sadly, all the cameras failed at exactly the same fair time. Enough. There's only word of mouth. Let's try this one then. Ellis, 23rd of February 1983, Manchester United entertained at Arsenal at Old Trafford in the League Cup. And at half-time, they read out the scores and then announced that Ken and Deirdre Barlow had got back together on Coronation Street. It got the biggest cheer of the night. I was there that night.
I love that. Also, that is more interesting, I think, than other scores from around the grounds.
Third round of the League Cup. I absolutely agree.
Barnsley
against Chesterfield.
Just a general bit of soap news.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that.
My favourite.
And you know the cheer as well.
My favourite announcements at football are the ones where, like, there was one at Grimsby a couple of seasons ago where they said, with the owner of a Ford, whatever it was, registration, blah, 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 please go to your car as it's still running. And the cheer in that ground got the biggest cheer I think I've heard for 20 years. Like, whee! Just someone left their car running. Was so desperate to get to the Grimsby game, just thought, well, I'm just going to leave it running. It'll be absolutely fine, Joe.
Let's see how they play in the first 10 minutes. That's it for the Football Zone. Thanks to Ellis James, Lloyd Griffith and Suze Kempner. We'll see you next week. Ta-ra.